Works of art, political activity, migrations, religions, artistic motifs, all that stuff. Okay, what have we got? Okay, at minus 540 was the restoration of Sestatis. Deuteronomy is being worked. 539 is the fall of the Babylonian Empire. Here, at 532, Pythagoras flourishes, according to Apollodorus. And in that same period, all these other things were happening. C is the continue function and gives you more data. What it does is it blots out the nearest date. It prints in reverse the nearest date and then prints all the other stuff around. Now it's scrolling up more. Okay. Pythagoras, Persian conquest of Egypt, birth of Aeschylus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, Ezekiel will scroll up next, and so forth. So it is, or is it, confirming that this deep trough is in fact reflective of an incident of novelty. Now if we hit to quit, we just go back to the beginning and we can look at something else. Not rub zero, run zero. Although rubbing zero might be more interesting. Okay, and again the default date. And what I want to show you now is the Waves version of the 20th century, essentially. Let's just start with, let's enter the Hiroshima date, which is the fifth day of the eighth month of 1945. And let's look at this situation on the 200-year level. I promise you this will end at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, really.
And, yeah, I don't know, where's the sun coming from? Is that better?
Almost.
Yeah?
Something from up there.
Just put your shadow on it. How about
Oh. Is that good?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the entirety of time from 1945, in other words, the 67-year period in which all of the historical themes will be recapitulated, is contained in this center section. And as you see, it's almost a flat line. All that's there is like a tiny pimple. All that lies between us and this completion that we are so hot for is portrayed at this scale as just the tiniest energy barrier. That's why I think we can feel it so eminently. But remember that because the wave is fractal, also lying that this is the same picture. If we think of this as 4,306 years preceding the apocalypse, preceding the whatchamacallit. So all of that time period since 2300 BC has been imbued with this sense of the eminence of the transcendence and of the transcendent, and that is what has given this period of time its peculiar character. The bomb is right there. The top of the pimple is early January 1967. And that is where, if you will recall what was going on at that time, that's where the concatenation of the struggle of the opposites reached its most intense point. That's when LSD was a mass phenomenon, when the hippie phenomenon, it was in the quintessence of the 60s, is spring, summer 1967. That's the summer of love. 12 months later, we were in the streets fighting the police and so forth. So it was a brief, brief moment. We have now come down off that high point. And we're moving along now a kind of crenellated surface where there are many dips and many rises, but the sum total of what's happening is that we're oscillating around a mean. And I certainly, that for me describes the 1970s. It was much oscillation around a mean, and many people found that very ideologically corrosive because they expected the continuous deep descent ever faster into novelty that they had experienced in the 60s. And the fact of the matter is, it just isn't happening.
Wasn't 67 also the year that Mao released the Red Guard?
That's right. The whole Red Guard phenomenon in China, all of these things were global phenomena.
Sort of opposite to the Summer of Love.
Right, although these things certainly represented chaotic forces, each in the society in which they were happening. Now, my reading of it is that at 2012, the wave disappears. The reason the graph is shown as ascending rapidly into entropy is because the computer is stupid and it wraps it around and connects it to the beginning of the wave. But you should view this last one as simply the blank unknown. Okay? We know not about that. Now I want to change the date of interest. And let's look at 1-1-1-9-8-5. In other words, the 1st of January of this year. And let's look at it at a level which will give us approximately three years on the screen. I say approximately because what is really being given on the screen are harmonic resonant increments of the other calendrical system that I outlined, the one that uses the 384-day year, not the 365-and-a-quarter-day year. So what we're really seeing is three of these lunar years, these 13-month lunar years on the screen. So we'll see, this will be 84 into 85 here. It will pass into the future approximately mid-screen. Oh yeah, I remember this. This is, here is the campaign, here is the election, here is the inauguration, and here are we. Well, if you read, we are in a deeper, more novel situation. This definitely was a long period in which everything was held in stasis, and then party of the right gained ascendancy, at least on this continent, and you see this happening. Now let's see this line here at 228. Is 16-7, the 16th of July 1985 is right there. So we are in this small period here, coming down off this peak. I can get it up in more detail. Let's see. Change the date of interest. Change the date of interest to the present. What is today? The 14th. The 14th day. January, February, March, April, of the fourth month. After years of doing this. And I'm going to show it all so that we only have 19 days on the screen. So this is like my notion of a preview of the next 6 weeks, or we can just look till we're bored, but well, that period before the election was long. It was more than a year in length.
I mean, in a vast historical span, you pick one that doesn't seem to have much novelty.
Well.
In fact, nothing happened.
Yes, like, remember how I said we were moving through, that we had just moved through the period of the Dark Ages and the barbarian invasions when learning died out in Europe and they thought that the circumference of a circle was twice its diameter and all this stuff? Well, that is that same plateau, and we are now slightly beyond it, but only at the beginning of the proto-medieval period. I mean, we've reached approximately, I think, AD 800, which is, of course, the coronation of Charlemagne and the inauguration of the Carolingian kingdoms, which really do end the Dark Ages, although where this is happening, I'm not sure. Maybe in Brazil. Oh, now what have we got? Oh, yes, the 10th. I think this is the 10th, 289 or 288. It was the 11th. That was, when did I fly in from Hawaii?
Wait a minute, the, ego's
was it the 11th? Well, we're all in it together. How was the 11th for you? Judging by this, see, it's giving a very clear indication that in all of those 19 days, unambiguously, the 11th was the clincher.
What day of the week was it?
Thursday.
So, you know, it's not doing sleight of hand. If you didn't have a big 11th, then this is wrong for you.
It was a full moon Friday.
Well, it's lunar, so it tends to keep track of that kind of thing. Now we've... It was a deep descent into novelty. Now we're moving along this thing. We are in this trough right here. And I might say that because I have assumed the end date to be in 2012, even small drops in novelty like that carry the entire planet into a new level. We are now, every day, we are going more and more into it. There are very few backwashes enough to wipe out the impression that just everyday novelty is intensifying and we're sinking into it. Let's see if that was the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th.
Unexpected.
Must be 291.
Had you not determined that particular date, then it would all be different?
Yes, had we given it at the very beginning of the program when it asked end date, we could give it any date. We could give it Jose's date. Do you want to see Jose's date with my end date setting?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What is this?
Let's see, Jose's end date is the 16th of August. No, but the date you're interested in is the... Yes, it's the 16th day of the 8th month. No, 87.
What's curious to me, Terence, is does this also take into account like the Southern Hemisphere?
Yes, I believe so. I think it's hyper-dimensional. It's, you mean because of the international dateline
and
all that?
90% of the history you'll have stashed in there will be northern hemisphere.
Oh, yeah. Although so much of the southern hemisphere is ocean and so recently colonized that there really is an absence of historical... it's the blank end of the wave, you see. It's the blank...
There's certainly been major historical things.
But we have no record. We can only work with the data we have. That's a value dark dimension. The history of, for instance, these African empires and stuff like that.
So we still have Northern Hemisphere chauvinism.
Planetary chauvinism.
Well, what we need is to recover the secret history of Kiwi land.
You have to understand, I have a sort of interest in that.
Oh, no, I know. I'm sympathetic. The marsupials, where do they fall? Okay, level 5.
Aborigine history.
Okay, now we'll see Jose's date embedded in the 3 years of the three lunar years of time around it. There'll be three lunar years of 13 months portrayed on the screen. His date will fall somewhere in the second year, as close to the middle as the computer can locate it.
This program has both years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now see, this does not support his contention because what we have here is this situation of oscillation around a mean. It goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. But after 3 years of this, it is in fact exactly where it started out from. Now let's get the dates on this. Which means nothing as far as Jose's theory is concerned. What this screen is saying is that from the 16th of July, 1985, until the 10th of September, 1988, you might as well go fishing. Because it's all, it all amounts to very little, you see.
But what if even that is your final end date?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Oh,
if we enter Jose's date as the end date,
yeah,
and then look at another date.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, I think that requires a cue. Let me hear. Okay, now it asks zero date. We're going to enter Jose's date. 16th day, the 8th month, 1987. Now, what date shall we look at to test Jose's theory?
Same dates we looked at.
The bomb.
Hey.
The bomb.
Yeah.
I think the bomb is a good, concentrated, clearly major event that we can all agree is some kind of a watershed. Okay. So enter the day you wish to look at.
So that would be hard not to.
What is it? 5 August 1945. Okay. Now let's look at it. If we look at it on the 200-year scale, it will just say it's close to the end, because his date is even earlier than the previous date. Let's look at it on the 3-year scale, 3 lunar years. It always tells you are 15,351 days from the end. A nice little touch there. Yeah, shopping days, exactly.
How much will you consume?
Whoa. Now, where is it? It's at position 144. Okay, look what's happening. A long, flat, totally steady state at this level of clarification, and then bingo, and a long, long slide that we could buy. Well, before I change the screen, does everyone understand the interpretation?
Yeah.
That moment clearly initiated a long plunge into novelty. Oh, you mean where is the date? It says it's at 144. See, it says 5845 is at position 144.
So it's at the
right, right at that point. Right at the fall in. Now, I'm going to shift the screen by using the command continue, and we'll see how long this descent into novelty went on before it was overwhelmed by the entropic backwash. Okay, there it is. It's this thing here. D-157. Intel. Early November 1947. Now, my guess would be that's an election day. 6/11/47. Wouldn't someone have been inaugurated in January 48?
48 inaugurated January 49.
Oh, I see. So it's not an election day. Okay, so it's something by this version. And this long trough, it's like this long flow into novelty, which ends in a wide trough, and then is mitigated and slides off. So if we use Jose's end date, we get pretty good agreement with that particular piece of data. Now let's see. We have 2 minutes. Shall we test him on the whole history thing?
Yeah.
Now how can we do that? Oh, I know. Okay. Let's see. His theory.
You should ask if we want to continue with this, because it seems like everybody's interested.
We'll look again at January 1 minus 800. Let's give ourselves some room here. Minus 800. Yes. Yes. At the 200-year level. Well, I just want to get way back in BC. Yeah, I just want to get way in front of that trough. Then we'll cruise forward in the wave till we find the trough. Then we'll get the date, and then we'll...
So that 600 trough.
With my setting.
Yes, yes.
Well, there will only be, yes, whatever the difference between 87 and 2012 is. So he'll hit the trough, too. Let's see.
Sounds like surf is up.
The continue function pushes it up one shingle, these things are called. Pushes it up one shingle. We're looking for the trough. I hope we didn't miss it.
That's a good awakening mantra.
There it is. Okay, now, by Jose's applying mine to his, here's what it is. The moment of greatest creative advance, concentrated creative advance in human history was from... yes, from December 559 BC until... What are we doing, friends? December... to 547. So what would right in the middle of that be? About 553. So let's query near with his date on 158. And 158. And it goes to the history file. This really seems like magic to people who don't know how computer... They say, is all of human history in the computer? All we typed in, friend.
Is there any
feminist
history in there?
Is there any feminist...
Sure, we...
You didn't edit that out.
From Hildegard von Bingen to Judy Chicago, it's all... Okay, Cyrus II of Persia defeats Medes, the Persian Empire. Oh, he establishes the Persian Empire, the great counterfoil to Roman power, which held Zoroastrianism is made the official religion. In 545, Persia conquered Assyria, the restoration of Sistratus. So here we come then into my... thing. Although, look, he got Zoroaster, although my typist didn't apparently know who Zoroaster was. Anyway, I think that's enough of that. It's 3 o'clock. I'll briefly entertain questions. I'm sure now, I hope, get more of the gist of some of what was said this morning, because I think the program really makes it accessible to people, and you can spend hours cruising these hills and valleys and dipping into the thing, if that's the kind of thing that interests you. I'm a real bug about history. I think that people who don't know history are amnesic. And that, you know, we would all... There's nothing more important, really, in all these forms of self-cultivation and development than to read history. You know, it's no cliche that those who don't know it are doomed to repeat it. It's true in individual lives as well. And it's the story of who you are and how you got here. And if you don't know it, it's a kind of a strange lacuna in your knowledge.
Are you going to correlate the I Ching with the DNA codons?
Well, no, I did that. That's not very interesting to me. It's been done by a number of people, and I had a scheme for doing it, and it just didn't tell me anything. Once I knew what hexagram was lysine and what hexagram was L-alanine, I didn't know enough about lysine and L-alanine to know really what to do with that information. This session will go, I believe, until 5 o'clock. Are there any questions about this morning Or does anybody burning to take up any of that again? If not, I'll go on to something related but different. Related but different. Okay, well, I guess what I'll talk about is just strains of thought that I see present in the world that I think will eventually be seen to flow together and to provide facets of this question: what is the nature of the transformation and what are the factors that go into it? I mean, obviously all fronts of human knowledge are developing at a tremendous rate, but certain strains of thought claim for themselves a kind of primacy. And I know the New Age, whatever that nebulous term means, it has a connotation sometimes of an elite with an answer that is only... all that's holding back the world is the fact that this answer is frustrated in making its appearance. And I don't really hold with that. I think that by and large the New Age is a fairly minor phenomenon. I've said many times it's basically the search for a way to get high without drugs, a way to advance yourself without putting yourself on the line. You know, just anything is better than facing 25 milligrams of psilocybin. While all these things have merit, they don't seem to have transformative merit, in the sense that the great decade of the New Age thinking, which was the 1970s, is certainly one of the most stagnant decades that we've seen in a long, long time. However, there are strains and things going on, and I sort of wanted to construct a mandala, not very seriously, but a mandala of four human concerns that lead to what I will, in my shorthand, call the flying saucer, which is this concrescent alchemical union of humanness and otherness and humanness and technology that is to come, I think, and inevitable, I think, whether on Jose's scheme or my scheme or some other scheme. I think we all are articulating the inevitability of something, and this game we play of prophesying the moment. You know, William Blake said there is only one moment in all eternity, and Satan's watch fiends search through all eternity looking for that moment, which is the way in to God's creation, but they can never find it. It is the secret of the moment is well kept. These fields or these endeavors I'm going to call psychedelics, cybernetics, space, and feminism. But each one of them overflows its label and becomes many other things. I mean, in other words, if someone said, but what about politics? I would say, well, that's a subset of feminism. And what about something else? That goes somewhere else. So let me... There's no particular order in which to take them. I think maybe first I'll talk about cybernetics, because that's a good transition from this little beast. Cybernetics is this epigenetic transformation of information going wild. It begins with the notion of writing and number, and develops up to the point where now 9 million computers a month are being connected into the global information grid. And, you know, there are only 9 billion neurons in the human brain. There is a school of self-organizational theory which holds that new properties simply emerge through the connecting up of large numbers of elements, and that once you pass a critical level, whole new properties begin to emerge from what were before fairly well understood matrices and arrays. The cybernetic thing is viewed as invasive and masculine and technological, but I think that's only because we're seeing it in its most raw emergent phase. We're actually seeing adding machines changed into these cybernetic devices. All computers in the world are digital analyzers. We have yet to have an analytical machine, and this is coming. What we have so far are at large adding machines, and when we get the so-called thinking machine, and it's coming, it's going to have an enormous impact on our self-image and our society. You can imagine the impact that Darwinism had on the 19th century conception of man, where, you know, the notion that man was descended from the primate line was just intolerable. Well, the notion that machines can think, and you've noticed, it used to be very fashionable for cyberneticians to write articles saying the thinking machine is a complete misunderstanding of cybernetics, utterly impossible, machines don't think. That voice has grown quiet in the light of what has been learned about cybernetics and linguistics in the last 5 years, particularly in the last 18 months. And it now seems very reasonable that this goal is within reach, an actual simulacrum of the human mind. And what that will mean is very hard to gauge. I had a mushroom trip recently in which the aphorism arose, to design computers is to be designed by computers. And I saw very clearly that the keyboard is entirely an illusion, a convenience, and that the keyboard could be made to disappear very quickly, and then you would not truly and clearly perceive where the interface stopped. And people who spend hours and hours working on computers admit that this happens, that there's a kind of meshing and you're actually a part of the circuitry. I think what holds this back from becoming an even more noticeable phenomenon is just our willingness to materialize these cybernetic objects as furniture. But the day is coming, you know, when you will be able to reach the Library of Congress by tapping a certain tooth with your tongue. And that is simply what the masculine engineering mentality is thinking about. Obviously, the feminine matrix which supports these kinds of imaginative constructs exists already. And it's simply that the engineers are catching up to these notions of integrated intuition and field perception and that sort of thing. To me, the computer, not the computer so much as the cybernetic network, is actually a feminizing force. It's like hardwiring the unconscious so that these oceans of information that beat against the human mind are not abstracted, not contained in libraries, but made ubiquitous throughout, you know, consciousness, and actually that we are beginning to create an extra genetic foundation of human understanding, which will always be there in the form of these large data banks. And as we learn to swim in this sea of information, the character of our understanding is going to change radically. We are all confined by ignorance of all sorts, basically ignorance of simply the facts of the matter, leave alone what theories might organize the facts of the matter. The other thing is the human-machine interface is becoming more and more subtle and miniaturized away. And it's possible, you know, to imagine a world where you wander naked through Eden And there appears to be no technology on the planet because the technology is all in a particular grain of sand lying on a particular beach in Madagascar. We'll put it in the southern hemisphere to...
That's where it is now.
You're right. The key is to actualize this thing, you know. William Blake said to see, what, eternity in a grain of sand and to put it in there if need be in order for that to happen. So that is cybernetics. The transformation of cybernetics into something really exciting, I think, is going to happen through psychedelics, which is the next of these quadrants of the mandala that I would mention. Psychedelics is totally discounted as a transformative force by the powers that be. It doesn't even rate much of a budgeting in the DEA budget. It's just a dead issue. And yet I believe, perhaps many of you believe, that it is some kind of overlooked factor, almost of the character of a taboo, because it is totally corrosive to all paradigms. It cannot be encompassed. The measure of it cannot be taken. Science is useless because it is a phenomenon of individual experience. And there is no way that science can get a hold on that any more than it can get a hold on falling in love. The problem is falling in love has not yet been shown to be completely dependent on a chemical substance, a material molecule, an atomic arrangement in space and time. And the psychedelic thing is the path to the origins. The transformation that we want to see take place is essentially an ouroboric transformation, a taking of its tail in its mouth by the snake of time. And this cannot happen unless we're in contact with our origins. This is why I think the shamanic strain of the new age mentality is probably the most enduring, because there is something to be learned from primitive, so-called primitive, pre-literate people who are living in the dream time, who are living in the imagination, and who never saw any need for technological constructs because the constructs of the imagination were so wonderfully satisfying. We glimpse these constructs with psychedelic drugs, and even upon our society, with all of its rationalism and all of its reductionism, they have a tremendous impact, which we respond to with prohibition and coercion and propaganda. I don't think that they are static, in spite of the importance of shamanism. I don't believe that it has always had the character that it has today, because the psychedelic experience works with the cultural overlay, works with the contents of your mind. I could never have created the theory I created if I had not known about the I Ching and DNA and all of these things. And yet the psychedelic intelligence was able to take that information and whip it together into something which was astonishing even to me, and yet I had been the source of the information. Psychedelics show the relativity of these various mental dimensions and constructs that we inhabit. And to this point, I've been basically speaking of drugs like mescaline, LSD, that sort of thing. Possibly, although it's not really exactly a psychedelic, but it is a synthetic for sure. What I'm more interested in, and I think that Rupert Sheldrake's ideas open up a way to understand the difference, is plant hallucinogens, which have existed in living systems for millions, in some cases hundreds of millions of years, and have been taken by human societies for untold millennia. When a person takes a drug, the drug takes the person. And so a drug like psilocybin that has been used for thousands and thousands of years has a tremendous morphogenetic field about it, garnered from the experiences of all the people who have taken it, that have flowed into it. These things point the way toward engineering states of mind that we can hardly imagine. The interesting drugs to me are the ones which occur in plants, have a history of shamanic usage, and mimic brain chemistry in some way. In other words, you're not interested in a massive disequilibrating intrusion into your brain chemistry. You want something which is almost like what is present, but which gives you a massive shift in cognitive apperception without any shift in the perception of how your body is operating. You know, you don't want it to cause muscle tension, kidney, all of these things. You want it to touch the mind and all else very lightly. The curious thing about the mushrooms is, of course, that they seem to have this logos-like entity locked up inside them, a speaking voice, a teaching entelechy that is somehow concerned to involve you in a personal exchange of information. And at that point, when you reach that level, you have totally cast off from any of the metaphors that your society has prepared for you to understand that kind of thing. It just appears to be delusion, and yet it has a very healing and integrating quality on the person who is experiencing it. Perhaps there is a life form long resident on the earth and so different from us that the main problem is one of recognition. I mean, I vacillate between whether the mushroom is, you know, whether we really can split off portions of our psyche so completely that we cannot recognize them as parts of ourselves, and then they can approach us to teach and torment us, or whether that's an unnecessarily breast-beating attitude, and that it would be much more reasonable to just say, there's no reason to be in awe of the pronouncements of modern science. Modern science knows nothing about the density of life in the universe, or the constitution of consciousness, or its probability of occurring in any planetary or physical regime other than the one we're acquainted with. We have no idea how densely life and intelligence is spread through the universe and what the strategies are that have evolved. What I said this morning about taking control of the human form by the act of understanding DNA, which got a ripple from people, I'm sure that this is inevitable, and I'm sure it is inevitable for every species which passes through that narrow neck, because knowledge is used and applied. I mean, there may be Zen-like cultures that find out these things and turn and move away from them. Perhaps that's what the Maya were about. But pastoral and romantic as the vision of the Maya turning away from technocratic civilization is, still, if you take evolution seriously, the goal of evolution is to keep the options open. Most creatures